Have you ever looked Confluent Schema Registry in the eye and said, I wish you supported Protobuf? Well, now it does. Today I talk to the product manager behind the changes and the engineering manager of the team who built them. We talk about Schema Registry and Protobuf and Avro and more on today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am your host, Tim Berglund. I'm joined in the studio today by two guests, David Luis and Tushar Tole. David and Tushar, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Tim. Thank you very much, Tim.
Now, we're going to talk today about the newly released support in Confluent Schema Registry for protocol buffers and JSON schema. There's a little bit more to the story than even just those two, but I think this is incredibly exciting news because personally, I get asked a lot by developers who are building things with Apache Kafka, with Confluent Platform, you know, hey, when are you going to support Protobuf? And it's so nice to be able to say, well, we do. So anyway, David, you are a product manager for Schema Registry. Tushar, you're an engineering manager on that project. And as always, I just love to get a tiny story from both of you on how you came to do what you do. So if you're listening and you think, wow, I'd like to be a product manager someday, or I want to be an engineering manager someday, if you're not in that role right now, you'll just have a little story from our guests on how to do that. So David, how did you get to do what you do today?
My career started as a software engineer. So I had 10 solid years of software engineering, working with cryptography systems and payment gateways. After that, I went into consultancy. And so spent a lot of time working with telcos in the APAC region, mainly doing reconciliation of events for them. And after that, I joined a company in the Silicon Valley in the ad tech space, so advertising technology. And I started working as a product manager for the data platform. And now I'm here at Confluent. I am the product manager for Schema Registry and Data Governance.
Awesome. Tushar, how about you?
Yeah, hello, everyone. I'm Tushar Tole. I am an engineering leader at Confluent. And I can't believe I just completed a year at Confluent. And I'm still as excited about Confluent and event streaming as I was on day one, primarily because I get to work with really smart people and work on really hard distributed systems problems. And before Confluent, I spent more than a decade at VMware, where along with my team, I solved hard distributed system problems in infrastructure software space.
Wonderful. Now, like I said, this the topic we have to talk about today, super exciting thing, long awaited. I think it's going to unlock the ability for a lot of people to use Schema Registry that haven't in the past. But I want to start. Oh, and by the way, since there are two guests today, every ball is a jump ball. David and Tushar, I'm going to ask questions and you get to pick who answers them. So just do it and this will work fine. Now, before we dive into the product and the specifics of it, because there are a lot of interesting things to talk about there, let's talk about how Protobuf and Avro are different.
Okay, I can take that one. So there's a few key aspects where they are different. So first of all, they are both great cross-platform binary data serialization systems. So the first thing is that their origin is very different. So protocol buffers started at Google in 2001, and then they were open sourced in 2008, I believe. And Avro was born in the Hadoop ecosystem. So it's a sub-project of Hadoop. And it became the de facto serialization format for Hadoop. So both are built around the concept of schemas that describe the structure of the data. However, the schema language that describes the data, it's different in both systems. So in Protobuf, they use the Protobuf IDL, that is IDL interface description language, where in Avro, they support both an IDL version of the schema and a JSON format of the schema. the JSON being the mostly used, I believe, and the one that we support in Schema Registry.
It's funny. I can't remember the last time I've actually seen Avro IDL in the wild. I just see AVSC JSON files.
Yeah, that's correct. And then there's some specificities around how they treat optional fields, and that's a very important concept for schema evolution and making changes to schemas. I personally think that Protobuf language is cleaner, easier to use. So, for example, in Protobuf fields, or in specifically in Protobuf tree, fields are optional by default. So they are backwards and forward compatible by default if you don't reuse the tag number. So that's very nice. I think makes it extremely easy to write Proto-IDL. But then on the other side, for example, schema evolution and this idea of evolving schemas and making changes and not breaking things, I believe it's more native to Avro. So in Avro, you always need to have the writer and the reader schema with the data to read messages, while in Protobuf, that's not necessarily the case. Protobuf was created at a time where the language of choice at Google was C++, so strongly type of language, and that you can see that in the implementation of Protobuf, where code generation it's a necessary step for you to use Protobuf. While Avro, they took a different approach, so they have a better support for dynamically typed languages. The code generation step and the compile phase is optional in Avro. The encoding also, it's a little bit different. The way that both encode data and the bit sequence, it's a little bit different. Because obviously both, like, they don't encode the field names like in JSON, and they're both extremely compact. One main difference, I would say, in Protobuf, you need to encode the tag number and the data types, while in Avro you don't need, since you have the schemas always available to you. So the result of that is that we've seen and we found Avro to be slightly smaller than Protobuf. And also as a result, serialization and deserialization time is also a little bit smaller in Protobuf. In terms of programming language support, I think they're both on pair. To be honest, they're well supported. And then the community support, I would say I have to give the nudge to Protobuf. They have a bigger community than Avro. I would say these were the main differences between both serialization systems.
Have you been much a part of the debate between fans of either camp?
I think there are like pros and cons about both. I personally prefer Protobuf just because the language, the schema language, it feels more natural to me. So if you're used to Java or C, like defining the schema in an IDL format, it feels more natural.
Got it. And I should have been more clear. I didn't mean to corner you with like a political question there. it doesn't so much. It's good to know that you have a preference. Doesn't so much matter to me what it is. Where I was going to go with that was when the debate happens, because it happens, right? There are fans of this. This is a technology, sort of a binary technology choice that developers can make. So there are well-defined camps. Of all those pluses and minuses, what are the issues that normally get trotted out? Like if I'm going to go get in a fight on Twitter about Protobuf and Avro, what am I most likely to talk about if I'm arguing for Protobuf, and what am I most likely to say if I'm arguing for Avro?
I think like the dynamic support for Avro, people might say, hey, it's better to use if you're using dynamically typed languages, then Avro is the way to go. Protobuf, it's very statically type language suitable. What I mentioned before around the optional fields and the way that you define optional fields, it's much cleaner.
Sure, it's sort of evolvable by default since everything's
optional.
Yeah,
exactly. But then on the other side, if you really want the fastest and the smallest, then yeah, Avro is slightly better than Protobuf. But again, they're both, I think, great modern data serialization formats, much better than the old days of ASN1 or some other more complicated and unnatural serialization format.
And folks, if you're listening with the kids around, I'm sorry we didn't give you a warning that David was going to say ASN1. that sort of language on a family podcast.
I had my fights with ASN1 in the past, so... I work extensively with telcos where ASN.
That's where you do it.
And yeah, exactly.
I actually never wrote any code against it. Like came close once and sort of stared into the abyss, and you know, a friend pulled me out, and I was like, you know, shaking, and took a few days before I could write code again. So, totally. And I come back to that later. Actually, I want to come back to, and we'll try to give you a warning if you're listening with the kids before we talk about it again. But that there are some other features that are happening in schema registry that could potentially relate to other serialization formats. So we may say it again. Okay. Thank you. That's I think a really helpful, trade-off between account of those two formats. And like I said, I know this has been long awaited, so it's great. There are plenty of people who use Avro and build very successful systems with it. It's not, and I think you made the point that community-wise, Protobuf seems to have the momentum. Like Avro doesn't change at a very high rate these days. Mm-hmm. I always want to be careful with that because it's possible for things to become more or less complete. But still, community momentum kind of on the Avro side or the Protobuf side of things. But we don't mean in discussing Confluent Schema Registry, we don't mean to really take a position. Now you have options, and that's great. And you've got this other option, which is JSON Schema, that's also supported in Schema Registry 5.5. Tell us about JSON Schema.
Sure. So by the way, the choice of the language is Protobuf and JSON Schema. When I started Confluent and I started looking at what the community was asking, I started looking at what customers were asking, this was probably one of the easiest decisions that I had to make as a product manager. It was crystal clear that there was a need here. And that need was mainly in protocol buffers and JSON. And that's why we implemented those out of the box in Schema Registry. So JSON, I think the reason for JSON is just because it's everywhere, right? It's the language of the web. It's ubiquitous. Any technology stack out there can parse, read, do everything that they want with JSON. So I could even say that it's the best default choice for you, right? So the first big advantage is it's a textual format, so it's human readable, and so it's quite convenient to work with JSON overall. And maybe you don't need the smallest and the fastest, and convenience wins over efficiency. And JSON, it's a great it's a great format for that. So historically, JSON didn't have the need for schema, but with JSON schemas, now we have a way to structure JSON documents, and that's great. JSON schema, it's quite powerful. It's still in draft, so it's still not a standard, and we implemented the draft 7 of the spec, but it has some very nice features, I would say. One of those being the ability to perform more elaborated validation rules through the schema. I'll give you an example. So with the JSON schema, you can include regular expressions on strings. So you can say, look, I'm only going to accept a string that matches this regular expression, or I'm only going to accept this integer if it falls under this lower and upper bound. So this type of extra, more semantic type validation rules, I think are very nice features for JSON. It's obviously not going to be as efficient as Avro and Protobuf for sure.
Right. But like you said, if you're using JSON, you have already decided that serialization efficiency is not your driving force.
Yeah.
Now, to be clear, this is JSON schema, which is not just vanilla JSON, right? This is, there's extra kind of metadata or schema payload in each message. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And we will put a link in the show notes, by the way, to the JSON schema spec, if that is a thing you want to read more about. And frankly, I think it is a thing you should want to read more about if you're listening to this podcast. It's probably helpful stuff. So, and David, you said this is the easiest choice that you've had to make as a PM, and I can absolutely believe that. If you're in charge of schema registry, like, this is the thing that everybody wants and everybody needs. And it's nice, by the way. So if you haven't taken a moment to just acknowledge your gratitude for this moment in your product management career, you totally should, because the essence of being a PM is that every decision that you make is wrong, right? Somebody hates it no matter what. And that's just a personality trait, that, that, which is one of the reasons why I'll never be a PM, because I would die within 3 months. That's the nature of the work. And this is awesome because pretty much nobody is going to disagree with you. So
yeah.
It's a good one.
For at least once in my life, I think that everyone is happy around me. So
Right. And that's it. That's maybe the only time that you get. And you can look back on this late in your career and say, I remember that one time everybody loved me for like 5 minutes and then it stopped. So that really is the reason we're rolling this out, right? Because there was just kind of broad-based community interest. Is there anything else going on behind this?
Yeah, so schema registry is a very important piece of our data quality story, and we are making some investments in data governance, the area of data governance in general. And so data quality and integrity of the data, it's an extremely important piece of that story. And so you will see more features that are related with data governance coming out in the next few quarters.
Which gets me to another question I wanted to ask. There have been plenty of people, like I've talked to people who have said, well, no, we're committed to protobuf. This is what we use in our organization. And, you know, look, there are these other parts of the system that assume it's there and the cost of switching is just too high. We're protobuf all the way. And so we don't use schema registry. So that, and we've talked about Confluent Schema Registry on the broadcast or on the podcast before. But as a refresher for people who haven't heard that episode, what good does schema registry do me? Like, why couldn't I just have gone off campus and done all my serializing and deserializing with protobuf and gone my merry way? Why did I have to, as it were, wait for schema registry support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I can take that. So Confluent Schema Registry provides a RESTful interface to you that developers in your organization can use to define schemas for their events. And once the schema is defined, they can actually share it across the organization. And it allows you to do certain things, such as people will not step over each other's toes because they can evolve schemas in a way that is backward compatible. It can also be future-proof depending on the compatibility rules that you choose. And moreover, you can run the schema management functionality separately from your broker, which won't impact the performance of your brokers.
Got it. So in general, it's helping producers and consumers make decisions about whether version changes will be compatible, right? If producing and consuming applications evolve and schemas evolve, which they do no matter what, because the world changes, this helps producers and consumers make sure that they're not going to either produce a message that's going to break things, or if they're about to consume a message that might break them, they'll know. Does that sound fair?
Yes.
I like to add that if you have data, you should have a schema, period. Consumers work best when they know and understand the data, right? So I would say that schema registry and a schema-driven architecture is mandatory in today's world.
I agree, David. I really do. And that's a little partisan of me to say that, because it's a Confluent thing, but you can use it for free, schema registry. But I absolutely agree. I mean, this is at least to me a 10-year-old debate in the heady days of all the NoSQL databases, half of which were schemaless, quote unquote, in circa 2010. You know, the the truth quickly emerged that there's always a schema. There's always a schema. The schema can be implicit. You know, your data storage infrastructure may not help you enforce it or make assertions about it, but there's a schema. And if you do have a quote unquote schemaless system or no managed schema, that just means you manage it on read. So your consuming application now has to do the work and the frankly complex exception management work of dealing with old versions of things and what to do when things won't work out. And so the piper gets paid. It's just then probably going to be the application developer who's writing the consumer who pays that invoice, and that will make that person sad. And we don't want to make that person sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. And one thing I would like to add to, you know, going back to what David was saying about data governance. So maybe, you know, initially when you start out, you feel that you may not need any need for schemas or schema registry. But as the usage of Kafka or event streaming evolves in your organization, you would realize that, you know, in order to mandate or provide the guarantee about data quality or integrity, you do need this. So it's better to start using it earlier than later.
Yeah, simple, let's say simple data models evolve into complex ones very quickly.
They do. And anyone who has written, let's say, built one system in the past knows that. So it's a good idea to get a little bit of infrastructure behind it. And the trick is just the right amount of support, right? You don't want to make schemas incredibly brittle and difficult to change because, as I said, the world will change, your schemas will change, but you also don't want the Wild West where there is, you know, there's no assertions of typing at all. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think, David, when you were talking about who likes Avro versus who likes schema, seems like the dynamic language people tend to like Avro more and the static typing people tend to like Protobuf more. And that's another, fairly venerable debate that we will not enter into here, but it certainly gets touched on. You mentioned ASN1 before, and again, I'll put a link in the show notes to ASN1 if you don't know what that is, and I was joking about it being complex and difficult to work with. And that's true, but really what it is just another way of taking the type system that you use in your programming language or maybe that you use in your mind to think about the structure of data and reducing that to bytes and then taking those bytes and turning it back into the type system that you're using in the abstract sense. It's a serialization format. Imagine I wanted to support that, or just something that isn't Avro, isn't Protobuf, isn't JSON schema. We also have added pluggability into Schema Registry 5.5. So talk to me about custom plugins.
Yeah, so Schema Registry, as you mentioned in the beginning, is a source available project, right? You can go to Git, Confluence, GitHub, and you can check out Schema Registry, where you can see the code, you can see the changes that we are making. And to answer your question, I'll take it in two ways, right? One is that, first of all, what changes we had to make Schema Registry pluggable. That's one. That is something that we did under the hood. And then now, if you are interested in writing a custom plugin for your favorite data format, such as, say, ASN1 in Tim's case, what does he have to do, right?
Yes.
So, And by the way, as I mentioned, you can, you know, all the changes that we made are source available, so you can check it out. So the first part is, you know, what did we do to make Schema Registry pluggable? So I'll keep it at a very high level, but there are two changes that we made. First one is that we introduced a notion of schema type. And after JSON and Protobuf JSON schema and Protobuf support was added, as of today, Schema Registry supports three type of schema types, right? It is Avro, JSON Schema, and Protobuf. And second support that we added in the architecture was a notion of schema references. And this is something that we plan to support for all three schema types. And so this is what we had to do to make Schema Registry pluggable. Now, let's say if you're writing a plugin of your own, then there are two main extension points that Schema Registry exposes. First one is a schema plugin that you would write for your schema format or data format. And second is a REST extension. Because as I mentioned in the beginning, Schema Registry exposes a RESTful interface to do CRUD operations on your schemas. So REST extension is a mechanism to do that. And so there are a couple of great resources that I would mention that people can take a look. So first one is a blog that Robert Yokota wrote, which talks about what we did for Confluent Platform 5.5, which is on confluent.io. And second shout out that I want to give to Robert is he talks about how can we extend schema registry to write a plugin for something of your choice. And he gave a really fun example of how do you write a chess plugin to play with schema registry. And that is on his blog, yokota.blog.
We will definitely link to that blog post. You said a chess plugin.
Yeah. So he talks about how to play chess with Confluent Schema Registry. So there is a really neat example about now you want to write a plugin for playing chess and using the two extension points, that is a REST plugin, that is a RESTful API and plugin in Schema Registry, how you can, you know, extend it to do whatever you wish to do.
Okay, that sounds kind of fun. There'll be a link to that, and folks, you can read about that if you'd like. Now, one of the things with Schema Registry, we've agreed amongst the three of us partisans on this topic that it's essential if you have any complex system with, you know, schemas more advanced than what Hello World would require, and consuming and producing applications are going to change over time. Now, that's the case with all of them. For any system that's not being decommissioned, schemas are going to change. So like we agree that schema registry is essential. One limiting factor there is that though, that community of producing and consuming applications need to play ball. So the interface is at the time of producing and at the time of consuming, the place your application actually talks to schema registry and asks, is my schema compatible with this topic or is this schema I'm consuming compatible with what I expect it to be. That happens during, for purposes of simplicity, we'll say during serialization and during deserialization at the producer stage. So producers and consumers, applications are responsible for configuring themselves to use the schema registry. And if they do, if all of the boys and girls in the producing and consuming community are well-behaved, then you're fine. But if someone is a rogue and writes an application that does not use the schema registry, that leaves out those config parameters, doesn't define a schema, and just produces some bytes, we can still do bad things. So what has happened in Confluent Platform 5.5 to provide an additional layer of safety there?
That's a great question. So far, we have focused on enhancing Confluent Schema Registry to add support for these two new schema types. But in reality, Tim, as you mentioned, your application might be a KSQL application or it can be a connector, which needs to use this new format, right? So if you're trying to realize your vision of putting event streaming at the heart of your organization, you need entire Confluent platform to support these schema types. And that's pretty much what we did as part of Confluent Platform 5.5. So as part of that, we added support for these two schema types across the platform. That means we added support. And I'll take example of just protobuf, and we did similar changes for JSON schema as well. So for example, for Kafka Connect, we added a protobuf converter so that connectors can start supporting protobuf schema. In case of Kafka Streams, we have added a serializer, deserializer for protobuf. If you take example of REST proxy, which is another source available project on GitHub from Confluent, we added a new protobuf embedded format that is associated with REST proxy. If you take example of Java, Kafka consumers and producers in Java, we added protobuf serializer and protobuf deserializer. Similarly, if you take, and we already talked about schema registry, and in addition to that, there are few proprietary components that we have, such as Confluent Control Center or Confluent Cloud UI. In those areas also, we have enhanced those components to support these new schema types.
Awesome. So it sounds like kind of platform-wide, there is support for the new formats.
Yes.
Cool.
But I would have there's something else, and that is if the producers and consumers are not behaving right, there is still an extra level of enforcement that we build on the Confluent platform to avoid that polluted or bad data lands and it's stored in a topic. And that is what we call broker-side schema validation, where we are now validating all messages, all incoming messages into a topic against the schema. And if the clients are not behaving, as you mentioned, Tim, then we at the broker side will reject those messages.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So the broker, in other words, knows about the intended schema of the topic and actually communicates with schema registry, regardless of what you're doing in the application.
Nice. Yes. Now broker has a direct line with schema registry, basically.
Very nice. And that is the so-called Confluent server. So that's the Confluent platform, broker software. So that's a Confluent platform extension to the Apache Kafka broker functionality.
Exactly.
Right. And that's huge. Now this doesn't make schema registry in my mind go away as a useful component, because you mentioned early on, David, you were talking about the various IDLs that people can use to define types. And there's the whole, and we're focused on basically, you know, if I could summarize this episode in two words, it's yay, protobuf. But kind of the broader schema registry concerns, just because there's schema validation in Confluent Server at the broker level, and that's huge that there is, if you're serious about data governance, that's a component of data governance. But that does not make schema registry useless, because the whole practice of defining your types in an IDL is potentially a very important part of the way a development team collaborates around schema evolution. Because, you know, by virtue of you using an IDL, to put it in very concrete terms, that means there's a text file that programmatically defines your type, and tooling can code generate from that and give you the actual objects that you use. And now that pushes all collaboration to that IDL file. So, oh, I want to change a type. Well, we have ways of doing that. We have branching and we have pull requests and things like that. Everybody who makes a living writing computer programs basically these days kind of knows how to do that sort of thing. And what is otherwise a difficult problem of where do we put that schema information and how do we negotiate changes to it? We get to bring all of our rather wonderful remote collaboration tools that we use to negotiate changes to text files, all those software tools and cultural patterns and everything that we use to do pull requests, really, we can now do that around schema. So broker level support for schema validation is incredibly important and a step forward towards some stuff I want to ask you about, but it also does not obviate schema registry. You still need schema registry in your life. It's still very useful.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, when I think about schemas and the need for schemas, I always think about these five things. So the first one is the description of the structure of the message. The second thing is the validation of data against that structure. The third thing that I think it's very important, and you kind of like touched on that, is it serves as documentation. It serves as a data catalog for your data, so everyone in the organization can find what kind of data exists. The fourth thing is the idea of reusing schemas, right? Data structures that are used across different applications. So the idea that they can reuse these data structures in a schema, I think it's incredibly valuable. And the third and the last thing, it's evolvability, right? So data change without breaking things. So it really helps across these four variables, I think.
Yeah, could not have said that better myself. That was great.
Tim, I have one comment to add to the broker side schema validation. So as David said, right, one of the pillars that he mentioned is making sure the data that enters into the broker is valid. And one clarification is that support is entirely dependent on schema registry. So it doesn't really make schema registry, it actually makes schema registry more important, because your broker is now going to communicate with schema registry to make sure to validate the schema, whether the data in your message is valid or not. So it makes schema registry all the more important.
Yeah, good point. Much more important, not less important.
Yeah.
I want to ask a little bit of a forward-looking question. And with an engineering manager and product manager for Schema Registry on the podcast, I understand that there are certainly limitations about talking about roadmap and things like that. That's not what we're going to do here. But maybe more broadly, and with the explicit acknowledgement that this is not a roadmap discussion. That's hashtag safe harbor there. I kind of threw out the term data governance and said that broker side schema validation is an important component of data governance, almost like a minimum baseline for it. What is, again, jump ball, either of you can answer this, what is a more comprehensive vision for that at the far end of the enterprise scale in enterprises with demanding data governance requirements? Where do they have to go? What does that have to look like in its end state?
Our vision for data governance at Confluent, it's really to allow our customers to fully adopt Kafka and event streaming. And for that, we realize that there's key components that need to live on top of Kafka to make that happen. And so data quality, it's a very important piece of our data governance vision, right? So the ability to say that streams are fit for consumption, and that the data that is stored and travels through Kafka, it's safe data, it's clean data. The second piece, it's around data discoverability. So very quickly, you see a rapid expansion of Kafka in the organizations, and you can go from 10 topics to thousands of topics. So the ability to understand and discover the data that you need, I think it's really key to unlock expansion across the entire organization for Kafka. And then the third thing, it's around understanding how data travels. So understanding the origin of the data in Kafka. So the idea around data lineage and being able to understand the life cycle of data from the moment it enters to the moment it exits Kafka. I think those ones are three very important aspects of our data governance vision.
If people wanted to try this stuff out, if they had questions they wanted to ask about it, what do you recommend they do?
Yes, so I mean, this is music to my ears. We would like listeners to give these features a try. So there are a couple of ways I can think of. The first one is, you know, if you are feeling lazy, then, you know, maybe try managed service on Confluent Cloud. There are three different tiers, and you can pick the one that is right for you. And these two schema formats are supported across all tiers. That's option one. Option two is, you know, if you want, you can download and run Confluent Platform, and all you have to do is go to confluent.io/download, and you can get the latest release, and that is Confluent Platform 5.5, and try these features out.
My guests today have been David Luiz and Tushar Tuli. David and Tushar, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah, I have one request to your listeners, is that we would like to know what else you would like to see in the domain of data governance. Looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
And there you have it. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at @TLBerglund on Twitter. That's @TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in community Slack. There's a Slack sign-up link in the show notes if you want to register there. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.